we'll get started. I'm a compulsive eater. My name is Bruce.
I'm Bruce.
And I'll be leading the session today. In case you are lost, this is the specific focus LGBTQ plus meeting, or allies, if you will. So everyone's welcome. Well, we're going to begin with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity, the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom. So as I mentioned, the topic of this workshop is the specific focus, LGBTQ+. Generally, specific focus meetings are not recorded. This is recording right now. But because it's not, we don't generally do that, is there anyone here who objects? I will turn it off. In that case, remember that when you're sharing, it is that's sort of being your consent that you're being recorded. If you want to be anonymous, use fictitious names. I suggest Ken or Barbie. If that happens to be your name, then by all means, you can just switch them. There's no judgment here. Okay, so I mentioned before, my name is Bruce. I'm a compulsive eater. I am seated with Sherry. And we are the co-leaders for this meeting. So each of us are going to take 20 minutes to speak, and then we'll open up the room for shares up to 3 minutes. And it's saying when I share, spend a moment or two saying where I'm from, etc. And then the bulk of the shares for the topic. So this, I've done zero preparation for this at all. So I'm flying on the seat of my pants or my shorts. Okay, so... Okay, I'm going to start off by going to my higher power, giving all the nervousness. I started OA in the year 2000, February of 2000. I've been abstinent since April of 2005. Right now I'm maintaining about a 60-pound weight loss, although there was a point where I just stopped weighing myself because I didn't want to know anymore. I'll mention I'm from Ottawa, Ontario. So, yeah, I'm trying to think, like, you know, how long this started and what happened, and I ended up, speaking at, at a retreat in New Hampshire, in a city I've never been to in my entire life. I've never even driven through, but it's very nice to be here. Don't get that wrong. So I am the youngest of 13. I don't think I need to say that my family was Catholic. I think that's understood. We also didn't have cable. But we lived on a farm, so a lot of this is more about having, you know, worker bees. Needless to say, I would say I grew up in an environment where there was competition. Like, I'd have, you know, a plate of whatever. If I turned around to go get my fork, I'd be back and something was gone. So I kind of learned how to hoard. But really what was going on is that I was a very sensitive little boy. I didn't have anyone there protecting me. And I learned that very early on. I can show you this later, but I have a scar here. When I was, I want to say 5 or 6, before I started school, my older siblings put me on a diet. I don't know about you, like maybe this just happens to me. Someone tries to control my food. I'm going to try to do the opposite. So here I am going through cupboards looking for some sugared cereal. One of my siblings caught me. I was a beater and I was caught. And I was running towards the back door. It was one of those screen glass doors. And the age-old question of what happens when irresistible force meets an immovable object, something's got to give. And what gave was my wrist totally sliced it through. Thought it was interesting because I was just like, hey, look, Mom. And, of course, everybody's screaming around. I didn't know what the problem was. But, you know, I look at that scar and I remember that happened because I'm a compulsive that. Sort of a direct cause. So I was always the chubby kid. But, like, I always, in my head, I thought I was, like, morbidly obese. But I was never like that. Neither in high school. When I moved away to college... my friends were concerned for my health because they thought I was anorexic. So I would play with my food, eat something, and then like, oh, I don't want anymore. I lost 40 pounds in my first term of eating. Like, I didn't do the freshman 15. It was the opposite. you know, people were kind of like, Bruce, are you okay? My head, I was like, I'm losing weight. Of course I'm okay. While I'm ghastly pale, like, you know, hanging on to things to walk because I had no energy. And, you know, as I, when I got older, I went to a different school for another university degree. I got into bodybuilding. When somebody was sharing one time about their exercise bulimia, that resonated with me. You know, getting up and I would go to the gym for 2 hours. I played golf. I played some football as well. Like all the things. And wasn't losing any weight. So I can only imagine just how much I was, you know, putting in. You know, if energy in was equaling energy out, there was a lot of energy going in. And I moved to the city I live in now in Ottawa to start law school. I didn't have all that time to do all the exercise. I didn't reduce the energy in, you know, to match the lesser energy. So the weight started piling. In my third year, I was applying for jobs at law firms. In the end of second year, and then in third, after the end of third year is when I start. When I went into the law firm where they had hired me, like, you know, 8 months before, I had to, like, sort of prove who I was because I was unrecognizable. Gained about 80 pounds in between the two. I can't remember exactly, but it was something like that. Like, all that, nothing in my closet anymore. To overlap with part of the LGBT focus meeting we're having, I found, like, I grew up, like I mentioned, grew up Catholic. Was told that being gay was intrinsically disordered in my head, and I had to change that. I got involved in the it wasn't my parents who sent me. I was in my early 20s, and I wanted to, because I needed to change. One of the things they had us do was put a rubber band on our wrist. I mean, you had, like, you know, an unnatural thought, you just snap the wrist. All that happened is I now have a fetish for rubber bands. So, yeah, that's to say, it didn't work. All I learned from there is that I must be a terrible person because I prayed so hard. Nothing had changed. That led to a huge depression. That led to a suicide attempt. That led to getting therapy for that. It led me going into another, we'll call it an S program, since there's lots of them. So in conjunction with the conversion therapy, I was working the 12 steps to not be gay. If you can imagine that. That's how that was working. I had a little understanding about how 12 steps work. That was my sponsor in that other program. Probably after I'd been complaining about all the food and step work, suggested I go to Overeaters Anonymous. Why? I don't have a problem with food. He was a priest too. As that man was, he said, I know you don't have a problem with food. I want you to go to these meetings to learn about the disease more. You know, hint, if you want me to do anything, tell me I'm going to learn something. Because that'll probably motivate me. So I'm going to go to OA for me to learn about the disease more, and of course teach all of you how to do the steps. My first meeting is in the kitchen, basement of a church. Rounding up all the newcomers, and we're all sitting around the table sharing, and leader. My name is blank. I haven't eaten sugar in a year and a half, and I'm the happiest I've ever been in my life. And I thought, liar. Oh, there's no way you gave up sugar for that. Remember the Catholic, then the Ash Wednesday? Every year, I would give up sugar on Ash Wednesday. The longest I was able to make it was maybe 10 a.m. on the Thursday. I can tell you today, I haven't had sugar since April 2005. Miracle. And that is not me. That is something else. Because there was no earthly power that could have stopped me from eating sugar. If I wanted, I got it. The other thing, I think is lying, is that, like, you, if you'd given up sugar for that long, there's no way you're happy. Well, the other thing that was said at that meeting was somebody shared how their parents would apologize when they went visiting for all the food that they ate when they were kids. I remember thinking, dear God, what else did that happen to? Well, I was going to go there just to count as a meeting for my other program. I wasn't expecting to stay. I wasn't expecting to, you know, believe that I was a compulsive overeater. So, you know, I wish I could tell you, oh yeah, that's the meeting where everything happened. I was going to meetings, listening to people share about, you know, how they had to run away from cookies and muffle nuts. And like, I could still hear the amen from the prayer echoing in the room, and I was at the door because I had to go to the, you know, the convenience store to get my share of ice cream, you know, big old pint of ice cream, and eat that. It's like, wow, I can't wait for the program to start. Again, sorry, I haven't done much preparation. I don't know if anybody watches the show called Agatha All Along, who one of the characters said time does not work. He's going to be jumping around a little bit. In that other S program, they voted that the definition of sobriety could only mean that you were straight, married to someone of the opposite. I think that's going to work. Off I'm into the program and got some abstinence, like for about a year. Ran into something in step 9 that I didn't want to do. Lost that abstinence and went into relapse, which is fine. That is a different kind of hell, if anyone's ever... Because I knew... Like, I was miserable before. I hated myself every day. And I didn't really know why. Now I'm in relapse. And I hated myself every day. And I knew damn well why. And I knew how to get out. I just couldn't. So, in the meantime, as I am going through relapse, I thought, maybe if I come out, then I'll get abstinent. I'm writing my step 4. I'm going to back up a little bit because, like, you know, I had to find my first sponsor. I got up to share his story, and I thought, I'm going to ask him to be my sponsor. Think, you know, of the most homophobic and racist person you can think of, and then imagine him telling you about someone that they think is too far to the right. Well, that's where he was. I don't know if this was some kind of self-sabotage on my part. Like, I figured, like, you know, if I come out to him and he rejects me, then I know this program is garbage. Right by step 4, I think it was about, et cetera, stuff that happened. I wrote that I was gay. You know what? Because I was like, I don't give a damn where you're sleeping. You're going to rewrite the step 4 because you didn't swear enough. Okay, that's a lot to unpack. What did he mean by that? So, essentially, and it was funny, we were just talking about step 4 just before here. Things he installed in me is that you need to get it all on the page. That's what he meant. Because I was being very polite, like kind of giving excuses for the other people that hurt. No, you can't do that. You got to be honest. Real or imagine. This could be all in your head. Write it down on a piece of paper. So I rewrote everything. In fact, still today, at the end of step 4, if it's a resentment to the person, my last line will be, fuck you, blank. Angry, I'm going to write them more. I have to keep doing that until I'm done with the anger. So that didn't turn out the same as well as I thought it would, because I had that same sponsor for another 5 years. In fact, there was one time when he had a heart attack. So the rest of us in the program were taking turns. He's lying in bed, like, you know, there's more tubes and wires coming out of him like a used car. And so I said, oh, are you okay? He was like, yeah, I'm fine. Now sit down. I'm going to teach you how to do step 6 and 7. If I have half of that tenacity that man had, I think I'll be okay in this program. So that was kind of a little bit of an auspicious start in my recovery. So like, what does that mean? Like, you know, why should we have like a specific focus on LGBT? Like, what I can talk about my partner, and I don't have to say, you know, try to come up with names that are very generic, like Terry and Chris. And I'm engaged to a man. Yeah, my mother was clapping too when I told her. I think I'm just very grateful about that because I know many of us are of a certain age. It's not something we grew up with, like, oh, we're going to go get married, like all of our friends were thinking about their weddings. I just didn't think I would get married because I was a horrible person and nobody would love me. And that took a lot of work. It took a lot of prayer. It took a lot of step work and therapy for me to get to the point where I could look in the mirror and say, I love you. As RuPaul says, if you can't love yourself, how the hell are you going to learn to love someone else? So I remember one time I was at a NOA meeting with a friend of mine. Now, him and his partner came up to Ottawa specifically to get married. It still wasn't legal here in the U.S. They were from Massachusetts, Maryland. And I believe at the time the state wouldn't marry you, but they'd recognize marriage, something along that line. So the fact that they got married in Canada, their marriage would be recognized here. I was into a meeting. Of course, my husband. In the parking lot, I get this pamphlet from this woman. She's like, oh, I just wanted to give you this, you know, before you leave, to you and your friend. And it was a pamphlet for that conversion therapy thing that I'd gone through. I knew all the people on the brochure. That's what I need. Things like this, like these specific. To get away from the harassment, it's rough out there. There's a lot going on. As much as, you know, I'll go to, let's call it a regular OA meeting, I still will self-fit. I don't feel safe. I've been to OA meetings in Louisiana. I've gone in Washington, D.C. I know what the temperature climate is. In Ottawa, it's fine. For the most part, nobody cares. They're probably hearing me talk about my fiancé, my husband. So I'm very glad that we have specific focus meetings here. It's a chance to be, I guess maybe it's just a chance just to be open, a little bit more honest in a group. For a long time that I was getting an issue, I have shared lots of, in smaller meetings and whatnot. I've shared in meetings like this at retreats and conventions, but in a smaller group, and I can relax a little bit. I have 1 minute left. What else to share? What else? I remember listening to somebody end their talk with newcomer, if you're new. Welcome. Keep coming back. Coming here from relapse. Welcome. Coming back. You've been here for 20 years, 25 years. And missed a meeting in a week in your entire time here. Welcome. Keep coming back. And if you have no idea what you're doing here and you kind of wandered in because you're somewhere else in the hotel, hey, who knows? Maybe you need to stay and keep coming back. I'm very, very happy that you have taken the time here, and thank you. So now I'll pass it over to my co-leader, Sherry.
My name is Sherry. I'm a compulsive overeater, queer. I'm queer, and I've always been queer. And I've always been a compulsive overeater. So it's very intertwined for me. My coming out story is very intertwined with my eating. I want to share a bit about that. And I also want to make you feel comfortable and entertain you a little. And I'll just give you a few details. I'm from Montreal, where all the Canadians show today. I'm 61 years old. I've been in OA for 21 years. I started in OA in California. And that's really, you know, in California, within 10 miles of my house, there were 200 meetings a week. There were women's meetings. There were gay meetings. There were men's meetings. If you want to be something unusual in your life, go to live in California, especially in Los Angeles, because you can find a meeting from parachuters. So it's an amazing place to go into program. So I want to first thank you all for being here, because I came to this meeting, to this convention, to be with my people. And I came to this meeting to be with my people within my people. Because no matter what anybody says, no matter how easy it is in the world out there now, I only see myself and my story reflected back to me when I'm sitting with a group of people like this. So I need to be here, and I need to look at your beautiful faces, and I need you to look at me and know that we're in this together in a different way, in the same way and in a different way. So I want to thank you for being here. I'm trying to do this all in order. I was heavy since forever. I was never thin, ever. Not ever. I always ate. I can't even explain. I ate. My parents bought whatever they wanted, and we ate whatever we wanted. Everything was served family style, very traditional Jewish family. We went to synagogue all the time. We had a kosher home. I talked endlessly with my mother about what my last name would change to when I got married to a nice Jewish boy who was, of course, university educated and could take care of me. Because my parents didn't ever for once think that I could take care of myself. And I can explain it this way. I wanted to go to Club Med very, very badly when I was in my 20s. Very badly. I read books about Club Med. I sang all the Club Med. I don't know what it was, but I just wanted to go to Club Med so badly. My father came to me one day and he said, if you want to go, I was young. I was like in my first year of working out of university. He said, I will pay for a trip for you to go to Club Med. You have to do two things. You have to quit smoking and you have to lose 25 pounds. Because my father was worried no one would marry me if I smoked or if I was fat. And of course, I agreed to this right away because I fucking wanted to go to Club Med. So we signed the papers. He put the dog's paws in the ink. The dog signed the papers. And I lost weight, and I quit smoking, and I went to Club Med. So he dropped me off. I was very independent. I went to Club Med alone. He dropped me off. I go through customs. I bought a carton of cigarettes, and I can't tell you how much food, because I got what I wanted. Everything was good. Fuck you. You could manipulate me only so far. And I felt sort of grateful for him. So that was that. I gained all the weight back, of course. And, you know, he probably thinks, well, he's not alive anymore, but he probably thinks I still owe him that money he spent for my trip to Club Med. So what happened, I'm trying to cross these things off when I get to them. But the next thing that happened was, in my coming out process, I was at nice Jewish summer camp, and I met a nice Jewish summer camp girl. I never ever heard, I didn't even know if I knew the word lesbian. I don't know any of this. I was 19 years old, and I met some girl at camp, and boy, I don't know what it was, but every single time I was with her, my heart was like, ba-boom, ba-boom. Like, I don't know. So anyways, turns out camp ended. We fell in love. I really fell in love. It wasn't just like, well, love is love. I was in love with her. And we were together, and we were so happy. And we didn't tell our parents. We didn't tell her parents. Her parents were Holocaust survivors. We were never telling her parents. And I wasn't going to tell my parents for one very important reason. And I'll get to that in a minute. Even though my parents were open and liberal and everything, I just didn't want them to know. And one of the reasons I didn't want them to know was because they were so liberal, I knew that as soon as I came out, they would tell everybody. And it was private. Like, I wanted to tell everybody. The day I got my period, my mother told our whole campground. Nothing was private, right? So I wanted to have a little bit of privacy, so I was just not going to come out. But something else was happening. My brother, when I was younger, was bothering me, touching me, and not being really provocative with me. And I've never shared this whole story in public before, and although I'm happy to share it with you in private. And I went to my mother, and I told her that my brother was doing things to me that I felt uncomfortable with. And she said to me, it's just sibling rivalry. Ignore that. It's just sibling rivalry. So I ate some more because I was starting to realize that A, I might like girls, and B, that I didn't like was starting to happen to me, and so I ate more. I was not doing anything right. I wasn't growing up right. I wasn't doing any of the right things. I was weird. I was awkward. Blah, blah, blah. 19, I fell in love. I didn't care about any of that stuff anymore. I out my brother, let him go to hell. And I was in love, and we were so happy. We were so happy. I couldn't wait for the rest of my life, honestly. And then she broke up with me, maybe 9 months into the relationship. Why? I kept asking, why? You're too fat. You're too fat. I was not going to provide her the life she wanted to have, which was arm candy, expensive clothes. Like, she came from a poor Jewish family. She wanted to uplift herself. I was not high enough for her. So that broke me many, many years. For 10 years, easily, I was not okay. So I just continued to eat. And I was not okay because, as lesbians do, she wanted to still be my friend, right? Finally, I had to move to L.A. to get away from her. So I moved to L.A. I decided I'd be straight, busy to be reborn. It didn't work. I found the gay and lesbian synagogue. I found my people. In L.A., there's two gay and lesbian synagogues, because if there's going to be one, they're going to argue and make two. So there was two. It was the 90s, right? The early 2000s. We were coming out. It was fantastic. I loved it. But I couldn't meet a woman. I couldn't fall in love. I couldn't date. I was too afraid. I was so fat. I was 200 pounds. Think about 200 pounds on this frame. You can't imagine how big it was. Even though I was I exercised a lot. I had a lot of friends. I was just afraid to die. So I did a lot of therapy, blah, 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 blah. Because if you're in LA, you need to do a lot of therapy. It's part of your ability to become a citizen of California. And I had to start dating. I was like 35 years old, and I wanted to meet somebody. So I figured out where to go, but I kept saying to her, when am I going to get thin? When am I going to get thin? I'm going to lose weight. I can't meet somebody. And look like this, they're not going to want me. And she said, it'll happen when it happens. That's all she ever said to me about everything. So I decided to go somewhere where there were other lesbians besides the synagogue I was at, because I was not doing that very publicly. And I went into, it was a book group, a lesbian book group in the women's bookstore, because they have everything in LA. And I sat down. I was so freaking shy, and I looked around the circle, and I thought to myself, who is the cutest woman here? I had read the book, but who cares? Who is the cutest woman here? Who would I go out with if she were to approach me? And I found a woman, and I looked at her, and she was adorable, and she was fat, and I loved it. And right after the book group, she came up and talked to me. And she's sitting right there. I've been married to her for 23 years. So God sent us to each other to come to this program. We both gained plenty of weight when we got together. We found each other to be fat together. So we got married, a big Jewish wedding. I called my mother a year before, and I said, I've met the one. I finally had come out because my parents, they said, when are you going to talk about it? And I told them, never. And I want to tell you the other reason I wouldn't talk to them about it, because you can see I'm not shy here. My brother was arrested as a sexual predator, finally, and he was going to jail. And I couldn't imagine my parents trying to explain they had a lesbian, a sexual predator, and a straight daughter. I just didn't want to add to their difficulties. I didn't want to discuss it with them because, like, it was too crazy. But I finally did when I met the person I love so much to this day. I called my mother and I said, I think I met the one. And she said to me, is she Jewish? That's what my mother was interested in. I said, yes, no. I said, no, she's not Jewish. I don't care. I never wanted to marry a Jew, blah, blah, blah. She says, well, what's going to happen when you have babies? I'm like, we're not having babies. We're not having babies. She said, you never know. I said, actually, I would know. They're not going to happen by accident. So we went on from there. On her very own, my wife converted. I didn't want her to convert, but it was her deal. fine, I'm telling you, breaking so much anonymity. We got married. Within 2 years, our marriage was having difficulty because we were so fat and we were so unhealthy, and I just blamed everything on her. If you lost weight, I would be happier. If you were different, I would be happier. No responsibility for my weight problems. And one Saturday, and then my father died. I was 40 years old. My father died. I went IVA in Montreal, and I ate an unbelievable quantity of food. Unbelievable. And if you don't know what a shiva is, I'll explain you later to you later. And I came home, and I thought to myself, here's my wife lying next to me. We're never going to have sex again because we're too fucking do it. It's too hard on us. And I'm never going to have sex again because my father's dead and I'm unhappy. And one Saturday morning, I got up. I knew that OA existed. I went to my computer. I found a meeting. I woke her up and we went to a meeting. It was in West Hollywood. It was a women's meeting, and it was really full of a lot of anorexics, which really made me feel even crazier. But because I, like, yeah, it was just complicated because LA is a skinny city. So there's sometimes more anorexia than overeating. Anyway, I'm just getting to the end of the story. We went out, we binged on breakfast afterwards, and yet we kept coming back. We always went back. And I became abstinent like a week later. My wife became abstinent the same time as me, even though we weren't together. We were in different cities. And I lost 70 pounds really, really quickly. And really, it was an incredible journey for me. I was amazed and happy. And I have had I have broken my abstinence twice, and I gained like 40 pounds back out of the 70, but I've lost it all again. And I guess what I want to say to you is, because we're soon going to end this, and there's one more thing I wanted to say, is there's one more little story that I wanted to say. But what I really want to say about the program and about being queer, thank you, is the more honest you are with the people around you and yourself, the better your food's going to get and the better your program's going to get. So when they say, do you want to tape this? I'm like, yeah, I want to tape this because I need to be my authentic self. If I can't be who I really am, nuts and bolts and the good things and the bad things, then nothing's going to work because I won't be presenting an honest picture of who I am to my higher power. And if I need to be able to do that minimally. So, I went for this. Did anyone notice anything in the bathroom down here? The first thing you notice? What? It was a scale. Oh, I'm like drawn to it like a magnet. I'm like, I'm just going to weigh myself, even though I only weigh myself once a month, and then I had to leave. I also want to tell you something that bothers me a lot about this program. When I quit smoking originally, it was through a class. It was with the patch, and you have to go to a class or they wouldn't give you the patch. Like, it insisted you do it together. So I went to the class. I did quit smoking this way. It worked for 2 years. And we had to fill out a form the first day. And one of the things was, what would you like to gift yourself with when you quit smoking? And my answer was a pack of cigarettes. So the thing I don't like about this program is, as I get thinner, I have to eat less. It really upsets me because I am noticing what all you are eating. And some of you who are still heavy or heavier than, just heavier than me, can eat more than me. And it kills me. The cigarettes, all I really want to get out of this program to this day, 21 years in, is to eat more. And it's never fucking going to happen. And I have to turn that over to my higher power every single day. Not cured. I'm not recovered. I'm barely recovering. Even though I feel in fit spiritual condition, I really do. More than ever before. I feel close. I have a higher power who I choose to not call God. lives somewhere inside of me and is that small, quiet voice. I am close to my family. He is good in my life. Every day, I think, I wake up, breakfast. Every day I finish lunch, what's for supper? I finish supper, what could I eat next? I'm so sad when I finish supper. It's so sad for me. I want to cry. Because I don't get to eat for like 12 more hours. Because if it was up to me, I would just eat 24 hours a day without the stomach ache. I can't stand the stomach ache. Now, I really can only eat a little bit. And it's hard work for me just to eat a little bit and to be happy. Oh, that, I'm trying that here. And if you see me with... feel sorry for me, so little. And I want to tell you one more lesbian-related story. When we moved to Montreal for 1 year to help my sister with her fourth child 17 years ago and have not left. Thank you. We went to an OA meeting in Montreal, an English meeting, and we walk in. And sitting in the front seat is an old friend of my parents, not with her husband. We went camping with them all the time. She's with her wife. I just want to say, you don't know who you're meeting in this world. Good luck. Like, there's queer people all around you. There's fat people, there's skinny people. I often feel like I look good, but I am crazy inside, so don't be thinking. All done. I have to work really, really. I don't know what I'm saying anymore, so I'm going to stop talking and tell you, you could do it. You could do it because I can do it. If I could do it, you could do it. And I'm here afterwards if you want to talk to me and if you need help with anything. I'm a happy, lucky, blessed human being with a life she truly wants. Thank you.
Thank you, Shari. I have no more information here, so we're just going to start
Here it is. Oh, I know there's. We're going to open the floor. We have, and if you need to go longer, is that anything on your mind?
And again, as I mentioned before, if you want to remain anonymous, use a different name. And we go until 3:30, so that gives us another 17 minutes. Oh, please, just come up and up to the microphone.
My name is Susan. I'm a compulsive overeater. It came out last fall. Ended my 32-year marriage last June. And I don't even know who I am anymore. This is my first time. I don't even have any friends, never mind. And I feel like I need to be with my people. Within my people. I really like that. but since I came out, when I first came out, I was so happy. So happy. Oh, it can be me. I'm still living with my ex-husband for financial agreement of it. He still wants us to live together and grow old together. But he's okay with not ever having sex again. I'm impatient. It's probably going to be another 6 months before I can get my own place. I feel like I can't be who I am. I can't figure out who I am until I'm on my own. Life feels like it's on hold. I haven't been working my program. And it was only because I had a nervous breakdown last night. I started to accept who I really am and who I've always been. The only thing that I wanted when I became an adult back in the 80s, the only way to be a mother was with a man. Made it my mission to find a husband is that because I was in the food, it's because I hated myself. I was not a good mother. Children love me. We have a great relationship, but I did not do a good job. Giving myself to that has been the hardest thing I've ever done. I know that I did the best that I could at the time, that I didn't have love growing up, and that I was told that I said and I felt was wrong. So how could you possibly love somebody like that? You know, I did have a lesbian relationship in my 20s. Became obsessed with me. I thought, oh, well, this is what all lesbians are. So I don't want this. And it got to the point where the only way that I could sleep with my husband was to be high and watch lesbian porn. I went getting ready, and I said to myself, I don't know why I like the lesbian porn so much. And then I went, duh. You know, it was like this huge light bulb moment where I went, okay, yes you do, and you always have. And since then, I've looked back over my sexual history with all the men that I've been with, not that there's been that many, but, and realized that I always have been, and I never let it be part of who I really am. So, I'm in the middle messiness, and I'm really struggling with my program. It's just really hard right now, and feeling like my life is on hold is the hardest part. It's like, well, why bother doing anything now? What's the point of working my program now? Because my life isn't going to start until I get out of here. But one of the great things about being here is that I get to be, and I'll finish up. Whereas at home, I don't feel like I can. So, thank you.
I'm Blair, compulsive overeater and anorexic, and really grateful to be here. Came into the rooms 10 years ago about, and I have anorexia in my story. When I was 15, I had a rape, and then plunged into a depression and was anorexic for a couple years in high school, and then surprisingly went the other way. Top weight was at least 350. I don't recall. I'm maintaining a weight release of about 180 pounds and a weight gain of 60. And if you had asked me 10 years ago if I'd be in the program and doing service at all levels of the program, I would have laughed at you. Services helps me stay abstinent, helps me get outside myself, and shocking. So I heard when I came into the rooms, like, 10 years ago, do service, it's really important. I was like, what? What is service? Just put away the chairs, collect the money, like, write people's names on, you know, the We Care list, and I was like, all right. Then I got into intergroup about 6 months later, and the rest is history. But thank you so much for sharing, both of you. It was so good to hear your stories. And, you know, right now I'm in a process with my sexuality that I am learning more about myself. And grade to a lovely woman, and we're having trouble, and scary. But it's also important that I share that out loud and tell you what's going on, right? Because if I can't be truthful and honest with you guys, who can I be truthful? So, yeah, what I know is that I have to work my program around all sorts of things. 12-stepping a program, you know, thank you so much. 12-stepping a problem is my middle name. You know, my mom, my aunt, my brother, my two cousins, and my grandparents are all in program, or 12-step, they rather. My grandparents never went to program. So I've grown up with 12-step programs in my life, and better bet I wanted to run the other way. When my brother so casually mentioned, when I was visiting him in New York City, like, how about we go to a meeting? I was like, what? I don't need a meeting. What are you talking about? Oh, how right he was. Thought I escaped it. Yeah, nope. But it's kind of interesting to be in a family that is in 12-step programs because they don't work their program like I think they should work their program. Just kidding. No, but all serious. Work around that. But just really grateful that there's a space that I can share who I am authentically. Just living the dream. And if anyone has any questions, I'm happy to answer them, but really, really grateful there's a space to live authentically, so thanks.
Hi, I'm Karen. I'm a compulsive reader. It's good to be here. I used to dream early in my program of having meetings like this. I felt very scared of coming out in OA meetings. I can remember my sponsor saying, after we went to a meeting together, and in my comment I changed the pronouns of the person I was talking about dating. And after the meeting she said, you know, Karen, I think here it would be okay to tell the truth. And I heard today about the value of telling the truth. The more truth we share, the more we recover. That's that. And it makes me smile to think of being in a meeting and lying. That's not what we do. So I took what she said to heart and I started taking that risk. And I stopped changing the pronouns of the person I was dating. And nobody fell off the chair and nobody threw me out. In fact, I discovered there were some other people in the meeting who were gay. And then we could talk to each other and be our real, with our real people. Really, with our people. I've always believed there is a great troubling connection between eating disorders, sexuality, and I was so ashamed to look at that, think about it, talk about it, more about it all the time, you know, 8 years later. And the book, the Body Image, Sexuality and Relationships book, I go to a meeting that we use that book. A lot of understanding, fellowship, connection, at which is very helpful in my recovery. And here with you guys and hearing from you.
Hi, I'm Laz, and I'm compulsive with myself too. Gay for as long as I can remember, which may not seem like that long to all of you, but is a long time to me. My parents sent me to Catholic boarding school very early on to try to, you know, pray that gay away. And one of the biggest things that they would do at the boarding school, if you showed any interest in being gay, was to restrict your food and take it away. And that didn't make me any less gay and didn't make me any healthier. Just made me leave the program wanting to eat everything. I left the program. I got very big. I got to my highest at 350 with my first ever long-term partner. And she and I had like eating disorder packs where we were allowed to binge together as long as we were allowed to purge, but we could only do it so many times. And I thought I loved this woman, and to the point that I was like, okay, I'm ready to tell my parents that I want to be with her. And I told my parents, and to my surprise, they already knew I was gay, but it was like, just don't talk about it at home anymore. But when I was like, I'm ready, I want to buy a house with this woman, they were like, okay, it's okay for you to be gay, but no one else in the world can be gay. So I was like, this is a step in the right direction, I guess. I bought a house with that woman, and she and I continued our bad eating habits, which just ruined our relationship. And I discovered that I wanted to take charge of my own life, and I found OA. I got weight loss surgery through that process. I found OA, and OA is what changed my life. The surgery, nothing. And when I got that, when I got through OA, I really discovered myself, and I found the woman that I am engaged to today, and I am so happy that I get to have her to be here, and I'm so happy that I get to have my mom here at this convention, supporting me and my fiance getting married, and loving the fact that she supports my eating addiction and she supports my life. And I just can't believe that I went from being sent to Catholic boarding school and getting my food taken away to having this relationship with my mom through this program, because without this, I would have never gotten to being able to have that with her. And I'm just so happy that I got to do that. So thank you.
That was a great meeting, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Happy to see everyone. Thank you for those who shared. Thank you for showing up. Let's end with the Serenity Prayer, and we'll do the we version. God, grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, courage to change the things we can, and wisdom to know the difference. Everybody. Do we need to do something there?